Good morning. It's 16 minutes after 8 a.m. and you're tuned to your community radio station, Raven Radio, KCAW. In Sitka, joining me in the studio, I have Chris Whitehead and Michael Jamrose from STA's Environmental Research Lab to talk about testing of shellfish for PSP. Good morning and welcome to Morning Edition.
Good morning.
Morning.
Well, thanks for coming down. You have a brand new lab. You're almost done getting that all set up, and then pretty soon you're going to start testing shellfish for citizens in and around Sitka. Let's talk about this environmental research lab. What is it and when did it get started? Chris?
So it's kind of the icing on the cake for a bigger project that started back in 2013, where we brought together tribes throughout Southeast. It started with six tribes and now there's 15, including Sitka, that are monitoring phytoplankton weekly, looking for harmful algal bloom species. One of the main species is that one that produces the PSP issue that we see a lot. So that project started in late 2013 and has grown. And so we have eyes in the water every week, but we needed a way to kind of test the shellfish. And we originally wanted to work with the state and utilize their lab up in Anchorage, but the turnaround time for the data to actually be usable for us to prevent human health issues wasn't going to work. And so we were able to go after some funding to kind of scrape together a few rooms in our 429 Cat Leanne building to produce this lab, to put this lab in.
So you are doing this testing on the ground here in Sitka then?
Yep.
Well, Michael, where are you at in terms of getting the lab set up? You're the lab manager.
Right now, we pretty much have all of our equipment and materials in place to start testing. We're set up for one of the tests. There's two separate tests, but we're pretty much there. And now we've collected a bunch of samples that we have yet to run. And this month, we're going to run those samples, and then we're going to send them to our collaborators at NOAA, and they're going to run the same samples and validate them for us.
So that will let you know, okay, our process works or doesn't, but right. I assume you're assuming it works.
Right. Well, NOAA, we're turning out quality data, so we're, you know, for something that's human health related, that you want to be confident of that before you're ready to give out information to the public.
Well, and then once that's all confirmed, you're going to start actually testing folks' shellfish samples. How's that going to work, Chris?
Right. So in each of these communities I talked about throughout Southeast, there's each of the tribes has at least one site. Some of them have four that they're going to be monitoring for toxins. So those sites will be monitored at the expense of the tribe and the resources that the tribes have every other week. So every tide cycle, pretty much. So here in Sitka, we're going to be monitoring Stargavin Beach. We've started back in November collecting baseline data for that. So that beach will be, there'll be information posted every week on what the conditions of the biotoxin levels are per species. So certain species can pick up and deprivate the toxins differently. So that's really important for people to know what kind of shellfish they're digging. And then if there's a site that somebody has that isn't Stargavin that they like to go to, they can always bring their shellfish into the lab, and there's a process to go through and a form to fill out, and we can test their batch for them.
And what's the turnaround time for that for individual batches? Michael?
For an individual batch, it'll be about, when we get the samples in, about one business day to turn around a sample.
So that seems really useful for subsistence harvesters. You can go out, you can dig your clams, throw them in a bucket, but you can take your sample to the lab, get it tested, and your shellfish will still be alive and ready to be eaten if you're safe.
Yep.
How should people package their sample, get it to you?
Once they collect it, they should set aside a certain number, depending on the species. We need about 100 grams, a minimum of 100 grams of shellfish tissue.
What does that mean?
So for, say, butter clams, it's about 10 to 12. For little neck clams, it's about 20. Basically, after they're collected, you just want to rinse them of any dirt or grit from them and store them just in a Ziploc bag, no water or anything in it, just dry, and make sure it's nice and sealed. And we're going to have a sample form available to fill out all the relevant information. And they'll be able, locally here in Sitka, to drop them off at our building.
This is incredibly useful for Sitkins. And Chris, this is was sort of your baby, your brainchild.
Right. Yeah.
How did you get this started and why?
Well, originally, you know, I worked in Washington State for a few other different tribes, managing shellfish resources, and there's a lot of collaborative efforts down there in Washington between the tribes and the State Department of Health, and there's a sense of security or safety when you go shellfish harvesting because there's resources you can turn to. The Department of Health has a great website you can look at and see what beaches are open or closed. There's a lot of back and forth within the community to kind of monitor these events, these HAB events. And when I got to Alaska, there wasn't anything like that set up. So mainly I just wanted to go dig clams, and I didn't have anybody to call to find out if it was safe or not. And so I started asking around to a few other people in the community, working with the tribe. Then I reached out to the other tribes, and they all had the same common concern that they wanted to be able to access this resource that they've done for, you know, thousands of years. And now it's to the point with climate change and warming water temperatures that a lot of these blooms are starting a lot earlier, and a lot of the misnomer of harvesting during the winter months is kind of out the door. So there really was this need to have a monitoring program set up. And so I think it was just timing. And then I knew a handful of good collaborative people from Washington State that I was able to utilize up here that have helped us set everything up, mainly through NOAA and through Washington State Department of Health.
Now, this is pretty groundbreaking for the region, this kind of collaboration that you're talking about.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just alone with the tribes in Southeast haven't worked together in this large of a scale ever. And so at first everyone was kind of like, well, you know, you can't really do this. The tribes don't work together. And it took a lot of just me on the phone talking to people, to convince them that this is something we need to do. And for a while, it's just this crazy Irish kid from down south is what I was called. So, but now, you know, now everybody's come together and there's resolutions between all the tribes and, there's, you know, lots and lots of dollars supporting this. So, each tribe probably contributes at least $30,000 a year in materials and effort to do this monitoring program.
Wow. Well, Michael, how did you get involved?
Well, I didn't really see this coming. I came up to Sitka a little over a year ago. I was between jobs, and I just kind of followed my brother up here because I wanted a little Alaskan adventure and some time off. And as I was looking for a job again, I just saw this lab manager position advertised and thought that sounded interesting and looked into it and ended up getting hired. And for me, that was really exciting because previously I was working doing basic research in an academic environment, and I wanted to do something that was more connected to being helpful to people. So finding something like this where it has a direct human health aspect is really exciting.
Yeah, and here I spent $5,000 on advertising all over the country, and he lived on Edgecombe Drive. So
that is often the way it is with mm-hmm. Sitka. Well, I mean, this just has so many components to it. It's groundbreaking in terms of its collaboration. There's this community interaction as well between science and public health that has real-world daily impacts on public health. It's got to also be pretty darn fun going out there and harvesting clams for a living.
It's pretty exciting to get the chance to step out of the lab and be in the field occasionally, and also exciting to set up my own lab. I've always just walked into one, and it's quite a process, but it's pretty exciting getting in all the new instruments and toys.
Well, Chris, you touched upon how climate change is impacting algal blooms and shellfish harvests. Can you talk a little bit more about the frequency we're seeing algal blooms that are harmful in the region?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure everybody is aware of last summer we had a big Pseudonychia bloom move up the coast, and it closed down commercial crab fisheries in Washington State and California. It moved all the way up into Alaska. That was really the first large bloom like that we've seen of Pseudonychia. And I don't think that's going to be kind of a one in a million times. I mean, we're going to be seeing that a lot more frequently because of these warmer water conditions that we have. So being able to have eyes in the water every week, we were able to pick up that bloom when it moved into Southeast. So working with other HAB people in Alaska and along the West Coast, there was a lot of communication back and forth on watching this bloom move up the coast and what the toxins were producing. And so having this program in Southeast, we're able to kind of work with the rest of the coast, you know, down from California all the way up to Anchorage and help kind of track these different events.
So that was that huge red tide that was in the news?
Yeah, yep.
And that, the red tide, is that?
So red tide's kind of just a easy term that I think people throw around, but Pseudonychia, the species that was out there that we were concerned about, wasn't PSP. It was another one called that produces domoic acid, which is ASP, or amnesic shellfish poisoning. So there's potential for death. I mean, as like PSP, but probably the worst thing is you get permanent short-term memory loss, which could be a good thing, you know, if, depending on who you are. But
so we're looking at more than just PSP.
Right. So our lab is set up to test for PSP and for domoic acid for ASP.
Okay. Yeah. It feels sort of like playing Russian roulette when you go out these
toxin
days.
Roulette, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's a comfort to know that there's monitoring. For the Stargavin reports, when you have them ready, where can people access those?
That's a good question. So we have a great website that we've started that kind of supports all this climate change research that the tribes are doing collaboratively. And it's called the Southeast Alaska Tribal Ocean Research, or CETOR, CETOR.org is the website. So on that site, there'll be links to each of these monitoring sites, and you can click on it and see what the data is for that week. Eventually, there'll be kind of an interactive map, so you won't have to like find the name of the beach. You can just go to the beach that you know on the map, and it'll be a little easier.
What about postings out at Stargavin? Like, there are bear warning signs. Will there be PSP-level signs or toxin-level signs?
The state has a sign that kind of lives out there, you know, day in and day out, so I don't think we're going to post any signs. I think our realm is going to be really trying to get that community involvement with this website and through other outreach tools that we have. And you could always call our office and talk to us personally, too.
Okay. And so when do you think you'll start taking citizen samples?
We're hoping to at the beginning of May. As long as all our data is validated by NOAA and looks good, we'll be ready to open up around then.
Okay, and how can folks contact the lab if they have questions or find out when they'll be able to start taking their samples?
Well, they can either stop by our building at 429 Catlian, or they could send us an email at cedar@sitkatribe-nsn.gov.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you both so much for coming down this morning.
Great. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Chris Whitehead and Michael Jamros with STA's Environmental Research Lab.